The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
On this Sunday evening, the Sunday after Christmas, Merry Christmas and all that stuff. Happy New Year. That's my favorite time of the year. New Year's, going into the new year. Winter solstice, I'm always excited about a new year because I'm excited about doing new things, meeting new people. New enterprises, new ventures, and all that. So I'm so excited. That's my favorite time of the year. And let me just welcome you in. You can tell us what's your favorite time of the year. Is it Christmas? Is it New Year's? What is it? What's your favorite time of the year? Your favorite time of the day? Whatever. Welcome in, Zola, Mother Zola.
Namaste. Meli Mikli Makli Ohio Lihiki Ho.
Nelly Meekly Mikley, Ohio, Hickey, oh. Yes. Tell us, what does that mean, Aisha? Mother Zola.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year in Hawaii.
Hawaiian language.
I had a Hawaiian friend and she taught me that, and that's all I remember.
Yeah. And I remember it too. We were saying it all the time.
Every year.
Merry Mikli Magi, Ohio, Ikeo. Well, but you know what? It rained really, really bad over the weekend here and up in the Dallas area, a little northern Texas. 11 people died from the tornado. So it rained pretty bad here today. But
yeah,
thankfully, yeah, Houston, we've been kind of missing the extremely bad weather other than the flood that we had earlier this year. But, man, I'm just so glad I didn't move to Dallas. I'm just so glad.
Me too.
When I thought about moving to Dallas. I mean, Dallas has really horrible weather. I mean, they get the snow, rain, and floods. I mean, we may get the
they
rain
get
and
the
floods
worst
down here in Houston. But, yeah, they get bad weather. Tornadoes.
Yeah.
They get the rain,
yes.
They get the floods,
yes.
They get the sun, and they just get it all. So,
yes, they should do.
Not trying
get
to
the whole
down Dallas, but damn. They really do.
Yes.
So, but I want to send out my condolences and sympathy to those people in their families.
Because
that's just
horrible. That's sad.
Mm-hmm. And I hope that it doesn't travel down here to Houston. I mean, we have enough to worry about with the during hurricanes, so. But anyway, Delta Kugel will bring us some more hot topics. There was some sad news out of Chicago once again, so she'll share that story with us. Yeah, from what I understand, I believe I saw it on Twitter first. Like a cop went to a domestic violence call. He went to this one, supposedly. Went to this woman's door, the neighbor's door, so the cops went to the wrong door, and so the woman was shot and killed.
The one, the wrong door?
Yeah, but see, why are you just shooting people from out? They shot the woman from outside the door, from my understanding. I haven't gone online to read anything today, but
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, why are you shooting people through the door? But I keep saying.
I have information on that if you would like me to tell you. Greetings, everyone. Hi. A young man, I think he was 18, 19 years old, was having a mental breakdown of some sort, and his father is the one that called the police. I read that the young man had like a baseball bat, was walking around the apartment or the house. I'm not sure what the dwelling was, but he called the police on his son. The police shot and killed his son. They went and knocked on the door. I don't know why they went to knock on the door, but I think somebody told them to open the door up for the police, and they shot and killed this 55-year-old black woman.
Wow.
And no, I don't know why or what excuse they're giving for shooting her. So there you go.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness.
Right. Yeah, thank you, sir. I keep saying that I do not think that all of these shootings are just like accidental gang shootings. I think that when these cops are shooting people, and it's just me saying this, sometimes possibly could be not in particular in this case, it just once again raises my suspicion on the deaths in Chicago. When these people are just randomly shot like this, and it's actually at the hands of cops, like in this case, I just really, really believe more and more of these random shootings are at the hands of cops. I just feel it in my heart. And until somebody proves me wrong, then that's what I'll just keep saying. I just feel like that. And from based on what people have said, and then it's just too suspicious, all of these various deaths. And why are you going shooting? Why are you shooting out from outside the door? Don't they still go through that little training where they run behind and, you know, the little, what is it, like the cardboard fake people pop up and you have to think fast and know when to shoot and not to shoot. Do they not go through that training anymore? Why you just, you know, when she opened up the door, you should have seen in a split second that that's a woman in a nightgown. So why
what they see
that?
In a split second is a black face. That's what they see.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly. If it had been a child, that gun would have gone off. It's trigger happy. And many of them are not going through any training. They're putting them right out on the street.
They are, because they can wait up to, in some cities, like up to 2 years before they even sit
yes.
to training. So they don't go
right.
immediately off to training.
No, not anymore.
Mm-mm.
Not anymore.
Mm-mm. So, and that goes back to my theory that they're just simply deputizing any and everybody to come out and just do some killing for us. This is the military arm of the state. Welcome in, Delta. I know Delta has some hot topics, and Delta's going to update us
Welcome.
On this story. Also, Scotty was just giving us a little briefing on it. So thanks, Scotty. Welcome,
Namaste, Delta Cougar.
Welcome.
How are you?
Going great to hear y'all voice, hear Scotty's voice, everybody's voice. Good to be among the living.
Yes,
indeed. And I was hearing Scotty discuss about the Chicago. And this is what they saying on CNN. They saying that it was an accident. And y'all saying that, this is my theory. Everybody got a theory. My theory is that we got automatic. It ain't so much not being properly trained. My theory is we got automatic assassins on the police force, and the assassins are Ku Klux Klan and Nazis. This is their way to get away with killing blacks and hiding behind a badge, and nothing is being done about it. Then another thing they can get away with it is because you done had so many cases where people polices, the people are finding the police is not guilty when it comes to murdering black people.
Exactly. The door is wide open.
So that's my theory. It ain't no theory. That just, they on the force, and this is what they're going to do in order to kill a black person, and it's legal.
And the FBI released a report years ago, like 2005 or something like that, that the Ku Klux Klan had infiltrated the police department. Now, you know, it takes them forever to do a report and to release it. So evidently they had been studying it for a couple of years, and then they released it. Once you get about 10 or 15 of those jokers on the force, they're going to get all their buddies in. Of course.
And then also David Duke also said this, when he started running, and remember David Duke was running for governor down in Louisiana one time,
and repenting and everything.
And then you have to go back and look at Bill Cosby. Now, we got to give Bill Cosby credit for this. Bill Cosby came down to Louisiana and helped David Duke from not getting elected. He the one who
he kept him. Okay.
He kept David Duke from not getting elected. He went out and he rallied the black people. Now go back and pull your history, and it's there. He came and rallied the people to keep David Duke from getting elected. But, and then also, let's go back to Chicago again. I want to go back there. What is going on in Chicago? Every time you look up, this is the second case where these kids are having a mental breakdown within foster care. In Chicago. Okay, now this tells me.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on, Delta. Before you go into that, let's give people the background to the story because happened. So some people may not know what we're speaking of. I have a story pulled up. Her name is Betty Jones, and she was 55, and she was killed along with her neighbor, 19-year-old Quintonio LeGreer, who was the reason for the police call out early on Saturday. And so, you want to give us the details, like the police went to the door?
Yeah. The young man's father. Now, this is, I'm hearing his father speak on the radio. This is what I'm hearing his father from his own mouth say. The father said that he called the police because he was afraid of his son. He said his son had a baseball bat. And he was not only afraid for his safety, but he was afraid for other people's safety. He said his son was having a meltdown. And from my understanding, the son must have had mental issues before. This is what the father is saying. Also, the father says, this is the father talking. The father said that he called his neighbor upstairs and told his neighbor what was going on, because evidently this neighbor must come out and check and see what be going on, because the father said he told the neighbor that that was his son down there, and not to come outside and not to let the son in. The father says before he can get downstairs, the father was upstairs. And I guess he was coming downstairs when he heard the sirens or whatever. He said before he can get downstairs, he heard gunshots. The father said,
well, who called the police?
The father.
Who called the police? Okay.
The father called the police because the father said that he was afraid. His son was trying to killed the father with the baseball bat, but the father is saying that he don't fault his son. His son was having mental issues. His son had mental issues. This is what the father says now.
And they said he was like an honor student at a college in Chicago, I believe.
Yes, but you can be an honor student. That is correct.
Up until September, that then he started having these mental issues, and so he had a breakdown. I'm like, you, Delta, what is going on?
Okay.
Keep talking
okay.
about this with these people constantly having these mental breakdowns
okay.
all of a sudden.
Yes.
Okay, now
yes.
let me tell you this. I'm trying to give them a little story so you know.
Okay.
You taught me to keep it in perspective. Okay. I'm trying to get it in line for the people. Okay. This
right.
is, everything mm-hmm. I'm saying is what the father said. And the father mm-hmm. said that he told his neighbor, I guess he was afraid he didn't want the neighbor to come out to get hurt by his son. So
right.
the father, when the father said before he can come down the stairs to go down, he heard gunshots.
Mm-hmm.
When he opened the mm-hmm. door, there was his neighbor and his son laying on the ground. But the mm-hmm. father mm-hmm. says that, you know, not the father, then after the father got through saying, then the The reporter picks up and says, this child have been in foster care the majority of his life. This young man have been in foster care the majority of his life. And so I want to know, there are two kids now. One 19 that's dead. Here one 17 that's dead. Both of these children was in foster care.
Mm.
Both of them had a mental breakdown.
Yeah.
Why are these, see, this is what happens when we take kids and move them out of the home. I don't know why the young man was moved out of their home. Don't know why the other young man was moved out of the home. But let me tell you, if the mother and father placed them there because of where the mother and father may not have placed them there, they may have been drug abuse or else the child may, people can call and make a report and your child can get taken out of your home just like that. And nine times out of ten, once they get in the system, your child will not go back home because the white man have learned that he can sit home, him and his wife, and eat T-bone steaks and keep five kids, because I know it happened to me. They can keep five kids and draw $15,000 a month. This is what the people who have my grandkids was doing, the white people. Had five kids and was drawing $15,000 a month. Have the documents to prove it. And once those kids get into that system, they do not want them children to go back home. They'll do everything in their power to keep them children in that system to make the money off of those children. But the foster parent not only make the money, the state make the money. The judges, the doctors, everybody gets a cut off of that child.
And a whatever whole it takes organization.
That is correct. Whatever, don't take my word, Google it and see for yourself. They're going to keep them in that system. So they're giving these children all types of drugs in order to keep them in these homes so they can keep them under control. Instead of letting them go back to their parents, what you can buy children, give them the world, but you cannot take the place of family and mother and father's love. That can something is going on, and we need to get to the bottom of this. We need to get to the bottom. So, and once I get through with all these topics, we need to talk about them. That's our Chicago topic. Now, I got six hot topics.
Can I say
topics,
something about your Chicago topics right quick?
You sure can, darling.
Just something on the Chicago topic. And then if we can come right back after the break, and then that way we can go into all six of your hot topics.
Okay.
And that way we can discuss everything. But I want to say this just really quickly, and then Aja's going to share her reading on her mind, body, and spirits, and then we'll take a quick break, and we're coming back with all of Delta's hot topics.
And do we have a letter for tonight?
I was just getting ready to say, and everybody stay tuned for Delta Cougar's response, Ask Delta. So we have a letter. Yes, someone needs some help. Mm-hmm. But Delta, did you know that according to this one report, and we know that this is probably underrated, 200, well, it's not an accurate count, 240 people have been shot by Chicago police from 2010 to 2014. That's one statistic. Yeah, 240. So, but Mother Zola, you want to read your piece, and then we'll take a little break and pick back up with Delta's topics?
Sure. All right. Tonight, my piece is on bullies. Who are they, and why do they do what they do? Are you one?
Uh-oh.
Are you a bully? Bullies are people or groups of people who are insecure within themselves, do not like who they are, and seek out target others who are different in some way, to throw attention away from their own real or imagined shortcomings. They use a variety of tactics, including separation, alienation, verbal, and physical abuse, which often result in low self-worth, depression to their victims, and sometimes even loss of life, either directly or indirectly. Those are the most popular bullies. But then there's also another type of bully. These are the quiet bullies, the ones who use hurtful verbal attacks to punish another who is less defensive, less empowered. They may say things like, "You're fat," or "Your nose is too big. You need to lose some weight." "Now that was stupid. Why did you do that? You know better, idiot." These taunting, hurtful things are said by someone in an authoritative position, usually, and this type of bullying can cause low self-esteem, unworthiness, and other dysfunctions over time when done repeatedly. Do you say any of these words to yourself? Like, "That was stupid." Mm-hmm. Or, "You're fat. You need to lose some weight." "Oh, I wish my nose wasn't so big. Oh, my God. Oh, that's, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. Oh, my, oh." And you say things like that to yourself repeatedly? Mm-hmm. Have you ever? Would you say those kinds of words to a child? "That was stupid. Idiot. You did that again?" Would you say that to a defenseless child? What about your inner child? Your inner child is real. Not literally real or physically real, but figuratively. It's metaphorically real, and it's powerful. Most mental disorders and destructive behavior patterns more or less are related to this unconscious part of ourselves. We were all once children, and we still have that child dwelling within us. But most adults are quite unaware of this fact, and this lack of conscious relatedness to this inner child is precisely where so many behavioral, emotional, and relationship difficulties stem from. The fact that the majority of so-called adults are not truly, they're not adults at all. We all get older. Anyone with luck can do that, but psychologically speaking, this is not adulthood. True adulthood hinges on acknowledging, accepting, and taking responsibility for loving and parenting one's own inner child. And for most adults, this never happens. And instead, this inner child is denied love, neglected, disparaged, and rejected. And we're told by society to grow up or put childish things aside. And we've just been taught that to lose all this childlike capacity for innocence and wonder and awe and joy and sensitivity and playfulness. And it's just been stifled or killed. So sometimes we talk to ourselves and we think nobody is listening. But your inner child hears this, and it hurts. It is already, most of us, or many of us, not all, have unresolved issues from our childhood. And so these hurts and traumas and angers, they're still in us. And to disparage ourselves by constantly saying hurtful things that we think nobody hears, then this is like bullying. It's like bullying your inner child. So we should think about that. We should think about the things that we say to ourselves, because we're actually saying it to the inner child in us. And I had no idea that I was doing this, that I was a bully, because I am the champion of all people. And I was talking to my therapist two years ago, and yes, I went because it was free, and by goodness, I needed it. And she asked me, what had my manager been doing and saying to me that I felt was so awful back when I was working? And I gave her a few examples, and she said, have you ever said any of those things to yourself? Have you ever kind of judged yourself like that? And I was like, well, yeah. And she says, well, what do you think about that? Do you think that your inner child hears that? And I thought, and I dropped my head, and I said, but I don't want to be a bully. And it really hurt me that I had been bullying my child all these years. So now when I get ready to say something like negative, like, oh, shh, it was stupid, I stop. Mm-hmm. And I think about my inner child.
So I know I bullied my inner child. I know you do.
Name something childlike that you have done in the past month.
Okay. So I'm very impulsive in more than one way, and so I'm always critical in retrospect of my actions, and I'll say, Oh God, why did I do that? Oh, that just didn't make any sense. Oh my God, I said I wasn't gonna do that, and I did it. You know, and I just beat myself up about it. And now one thing that I'm learning to catch is because I was listening to one of my little YouTube meditation videos I've watched, and I listened to it. And this one person was giving a guided meditation, and they said something that just really, really, really resonated with me. And the meditation spoke about how if we're always asking for something, like when you're praying, you just always ask constantly, especially for money. You know, oh, I need some money to do this. Oh, I need some money. If we're always just constantly asking for something, then we begin to, I guess, like emit this whole essence of you're just always in need. So if you're always feeling like you're in need, then you're always going to be in need.
Yes, you will always be in need.
Right. What you put out into the universe, that's what's coming back out to you. So you're always crying about you need this, you want this, you need this to happen. And so you're always in a negative state of mind, always in not like negative, but you're feeling like you're lacking something, you need something.
Exactly.
Else. Right. So that's what's going to be your life and your essence. So we need to feel grateful more, be more grateful. Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to pick back up finishing up on your reading and Delta Cougar's Hot Topic. We'll be right back.
Podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
So, we're back.
Black Rose.
Please, yes. Yes.
Thank you for your response to a question, but I want to know what childlike activity or thing that you have done. Because what I said was, we lose our childhood innocence because we think that, well, I'm an adult now and I shouldn't do that, you know. Okay. But I read somewhere where when a child becomes ashamed, that's when they lose their childhood. Do you get it? When
a
they
child
become
becomes ashamed.
Okay. Yes. I was over to my friend G's house one day, and she had a little, you know, Cicely. Cicely was about six. She was about 6 years old. So the three of us, the chocolate posse, were visiting each other. And so her little girl, all three of us in the living room, she ran out of the bathroom. Evidently, when we came over, she was giving her little girl a bath. So she got up, answered the door. And so we like, ah! So the little girl got tired of her waiting for us. So she just climbed out of the bathtub with soap and suds all over her and ran in the bathroom like, hey! And naked as a jaybird. And she was just dancing around. And she had this little butt sitting there. Looked like somebody had rolled up something and just slapped it on her butt. And she was just running around, just giggling. And we just thought it was the cutest thing because she was not ashamed of her nakedness. She just thought it was just so funny, you know. And so there's childhood innocence. Mm-hmm. So when a child loses that, that's when they change. That's when change. Okay, so what have you done that's sort of like childhood-like?
In the past month?
Lately. Yeah.
Okay. Huh.
I'll tell you what I've done while you think. Okay. Here in Houston, they've got these wide, wide streets. You know, it's like about six lanes. So when you get ready to cross the street, there's got this median in the center. And sometimes they hire people to stand up there with big signs, you know, come to their shops. It's a wide median. So when you're crossing the street, you can, you know, when you're not at the light, you can just cross the street and wait on that median until the next lane of cars come through. So I do that. So I had my earphones on. And of course, a good song was on. And I just started dancing. You know, as the car's whizzing by, I wasn't getting down, you know, but I was moving my way. And I just didn't feel ashamed or that anybody was going to say, I wasn't waving at people, you know, like I was crazy. Just kind of, you know, like dancing. And it wasn't like I felt like, oh, people going to think I'm crazy. Oh, I shouldn't. It was just, I just felt like doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, I just felt like doing it. Sometimes I walk by a tree. And I'll go and I'll rub the tree. You know, it's childlike awe and wonder and, you know.
Well, update Brother Brown and Mother Hattie because they've joined us too. So maybe they have an inner child that they've mistreated or some childlike action that they've done over the past month. Brother Brown.
Yes, good evening.
Welcome in.
Hi, Brother Brown.
I'm listening. I like this.
So that's why I was wondering. Update them so that they can share, and then we'll move into Delta's hot topic. Let me give out the phone number. 641-715-3660 is the number to dial if you're listening online. And the participant code is 549032, and then press pound.
Okay.
So give us a quick
okay,
update.
So the topic is this reading here is bullies. So we know about the bullies that taunt children in school and sometimes they cause some, you know, some tragic events, and sometimes they actually hit them with things and jump on them and stuff like that. But I was made aware a couple of years ago of another type of a bully, the quiet bully. The bully that says things to a defenseless person, a less empowered person, hurtful verbal things. Sometimes verbal abuse can be more harmful than actual physical abuse. It tends to last longer. So you may say things like, your nose is too big, or that was stupid, or idiot. Why did you go and, oh God, I can't believe you did that. You know, these are things that we sometimes say to ourselves. Nobody else is listening. You know, it's our way of releasing whatever that's in us. But we have an inner child that we are, sometimes we're not conscious of. And that inner child hears these things. And these are things that, although we say them to ourselves as adults, we would never, I don't think anybody on this phone would say these things to a real child. Like, the idiot? I know I wouldn't. But we're saying this to the inner child in us, and it really does a lot of damage. It causes a lot of mental disorders, destructive behavior patterns, and we are unaware of this, and we need to be aware when we say these hurtful things to ourselves, like, you're fat, or, oh, I wish I wasn't like, I wish I wasn't built this way, or negative things to ourselves, meaning that we don't like who we are or what we have become. The inner child feels that, and the inner child has accumulated a lot of hurts and traumas and fears as we have become adults, and it's still there. And when we say these things, we're just piling it on the inner child, and the inner child is hurting. And sometimes the inner child comes out and it acts up. It goes off on people. It curses people out. It throws tantrums. That's that inner child breaking out of you. Because sometimes we have unresolved childhood issues that we just kicked under the rug because we're adults now. And we're expected to act like adults. But every adult isn't an adult. They just grew up. So I wanted to know, what childhood thing have you done in the last month that you would think, like, wow, that was fun? You just did it because the childhood and the inner child and you just came out to be playful. Your inner child didn't come out to be angry or throw a temper tantrum, but it came out to be playful. It could be at home, it could be out, you know.
Well, you know, one of the things that I do, sister, is I think deep down inside, that was one of my motivating factors to get me some little children in my house so I could still live in my little inner child sometimes.
Yes.
And you can easily do that when you have children around you. And one of the things, I mean, I'm always doing something childish with them, like even simple as watching cartoons and giggling about them and laughing and just,
oh,
I mean,
yeah.
That's something
I
that
love doing that.
And so a lot of things that I will do, I'm trying to entertain them, but yet mm-hmm. I'm feeding my inner child as well, because it's like,
yes, you are.
You look kind of silly doing those things without children around you. It's like, look at that adult person, old person over there doing it. And so but when you have children, people can kind of accept it a little better. Oh, she's
yes.
Look at how she's playing with them.
Yes.
Oh, so, I mean, I'm kind of a constant.
Mm-hmm. I just said,
I'm on a constant.
Oh, she looks like she's having so much fun.
Yeah.
While you're out having fun with the children.
Right. But it's, you know, I'm feeding my inner child.
It keeps you young too. When the ages cross over like that, it does. It really does.
It might.
Okay, this.
I know you sure get to know a lot of things.
Because we stop playing. We don't grow old because we stop having fun. We stop having fun because we grow. No, it's the other way. We don't grow. I'll get it before we leave this. But in other words, it's saying don't stop having fun
when you get
you
older.
Know, just be yeah. When you be you just become you get older, don't stop having fun.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a summer camp counselor, I always asked for the 5 and 6 year olds. Nobody wanted the little babies. They wanted the older, 13, 14, 15. I wanted the 5 and 6 year olds. I had the best time
mm-hmm.
of my life playing tisket, a tasket, and kickball,
oh.
and all those
oh.
wonderful things.
Mm-hmm.
I had a ball. I had an absolute ball.
Wait, yeah. Girl, I'll be outside in the park on my walker. I'll sit on my walker for a while, and I'll pitch the ball to the boy, and the boy hits the ball. Of course, he got to go run and get his own ball. If I'm on my cane, you know, I'm walking.
Yeah. But you can pitch the ball.
I'll be playing with him. I can pitch that ball to him.
All right.
I sure can.
Brother Brown, have you done any childlike activities lately?
No, not really that I can not.
Well, Brother Brown, let me ask you this. Did you shoot marbles when you were a little boy?
Every day.
Every day.
Every day.
Dice.
And the thing about it is, some of the things that I did as a kid that I don't see kids doing now, one of them was marbles. We have a certain time of the year that everybody played marbles. At the beginning of the spring, we played marbles. And you know what we played? We called playing for having.
Mm-hmm.
If I win your marbles, I give them a chance to take them home. And
right.
I would load my marbles up in my pocket. I guess I was about 10 or 11. I would load my marbles up in my pocket. And my grandmother said she would make me count my marbles out. And she said, yeah, you're leaving out with 15 marbles. You better come home with 15. Because some days I would come home with 40 marbles. And I didn't understand. She said, because you know when you take other people's stuff like that, she said, that's gambling. And that was my first introduction to gambling, because I went out to win other people's marbles. And I won marbles every day. So, you know,
wow.
That's...
So that was your thing. That was... You were the marble king.
Yeah, I played marble. Some kids wouldn't even play with me. But
they knew you'd take their marbles.
They wanted to keep their marbles.
You were the marble hustler, like the movie, with the pool shark. Oh, Lord, here comes the hustler.
Is, you know, when I was in Virginia, I coached kids. I coached youth basketball. And every year I have a team if I had to sponsor myself. So I haven't had a chance up here to actually get a team like I want to, but I mentor to young ball players that play high school ball. So, you know, that's what I do now. I'll probably start coaching next week, next year after I finish up some of these cases, and I'm not going to put things off. So I can get back into that mode, because it fascinates me to watch kids play basketball.
I bet.
And I always play with the kids between the ages of 10 and 12.
Oh, you that's know, a good age.
Yeah, that was my age bracket. And
that's a good age.
Some of the kids that I coached, when I went back down south and I would see some of them had grown up and I didn't know them, and they would walk up to me, and they were playing AAU ball, and some of them were playing high school ball, but they thanked me for getting their start with me when they were for age, you know. A lot of them, you know, that out of the street. But I mean, just because a kid couldn't play, I didn't stop him from being on my team. And I had one young man, he wanted to play so bad. And I told him, I said, well, you can come on and join the team. He said, well, Mr. Brown, I don't know how to play. I said, well, I'm going to show you how to play if you just do what I tell you to do. You know, and I taught him the position that I wanted him to play, because he was a pretty chunky guy, but he could get rebounds. And he didn't have to be that. You know, that's what people don't understand about coaching. You place kids. The thing about coaching at any level is putting the kid where they can be useful to the team now, and teaching them the fundamentals.
Right.
And you show them, you don't have to be the best shooter. You don't have to be the best to be a contributor to the team.
Do what
and
you do.
That's what I did. I put them where they could be useful at, and I let everybody get playing time, and we all played as a team. I never let them argue amongst each other about who didn't do what. I said, because, and I made this a rule, ain't nobody perfect. I had one little kid, he was an ex-basketball ball player, but he had a problem because he thought that nobody could else could play with him. So he would come to practice when you wanted to. So I got tired of it. Yeah. So one day he came to practice. And, you know, plus he had a daddy that was, his father was a big time drug dealer that got locked up for life. So he thought he was a little halfway gangster, but I didn't pay any mind. He came to practice one day and I think he was about 20 minutes late. So he goes out there on the court with his kid and I said, no, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm coming. I said, no, I see you're going to run 10 laps. And then you're going to sit down, practice, and you're going to watch. He said, well, if I can't play, he said, if I can't do what I want to do, he said, then I don't have to play. I said, well, then what you going to do? Call your mother and tell her to come pick you up. I said, because you're going to run this team.
I know, that's right.
He sit down there, and he piled it. And then next thing I know, he was crying.
Crying.
He was crying. I'm sorry, Mr. Brown. I didn't mean to do that. I said, okay, well, you have to realize that we play as a team. We win as a team. We lose as a team. I said, we contribute each other as a team. I said, man, I want you to apologize to the team. Take five.
Oh, that's good.
Because you have to show them. The major thing about sports, not all this winning like people say. You want to win, sure, but it's teaching them respect for each other and discipline. If you can't teach
and
that.
Teamwork.
Right, and teamwork. If you can't teach that when you're coaching kids, then you're not a good coach.
Yeah. Something else you did, Brother Brown, the first young man, you found his strength, and that was very good, helpful for him. You found
right.
his strength. You
put him on. I saw him years later when he was going to high school, and he told me, he said, Mr. Brown, he said, you know, guess what? I'm getting ready to graduate. And I played in the band for 3 years. He said, and I've been accepted to the U.S. Naval Academy.
Excellent.
Yes.
Wow.
If it hadn't been for encouraging me, he said, I could have been probably locked up because I would always. There's some rough kids, man. I'm telling you.
I saved
all of them, but two. Two of them got away. You know, one of them doing life.
They get away.
Huh?
Oh, yeah. It's impossible to save
sometimes,
all of them.
Yeah.
Sometimes they may get away, but the
one of them, life in penitentiary. He got life in federal penitentiary. He killed a police officer. And, but they really couldn't prove he did it. But the way they had a trial rigged up where he was supposed to tell somebody while he was incarcerated that he killed a police officer. They tested it back and used it against him. And technically, you know, that jailhouse stuff. And I only think, in my opinion, that's not credible enough to it because the person that you're supposed to be telling this to had no connection with the crime. They weren't there when the crime was committed. So technically, you really can't use that against that person that's already locked up. But they did. That's how he ended up with life.
Yeah, they make their own rules as they go.
Yeah, because he had a poor lawyer. If he had a better lawyer, that would challenge some of the things that were introduced in the court, he could have gotten out of that.
All about money.
He had
Brother Brown, and I know Dale to wait and give her hot topics. So
he had other charges on the state level, so he was already locked up. So that just added to his demise.
Oh.
But yeah, I'm done.
Okay.
But look, I have to step away for about 10 minutes because I have to make a very important phone call. My wife had death in the family, so a family member just, I'll be right back in about 5 minutes.
Okay. Well, our condolences. Okay. Right. We'll move on to death.
Yes.
All right. Death has some hot topics for us. Just let us know when you're back, Brother Brown, okay?
Okay.
All right.
But you can put me on mute, and I can
hey.
Be That means you can't hear my conversation, but I can still hear the topic.
Okay.
Just press *61 when you're ready for us to bring you back in, all right?
Okay.
Or send me a text. Okay.
Delta, thank you for your patience. I know you have 6 hot topics for us. So what do you have, Miss Singh?
Okay. Our first one is down in Baltimore, Maryland. Okay. We have we have 4 people got shot. It just come up on the thing. And one that was, one of them is in critical condition.
On what thing?
You know, on my Facebook.
Twitter.
On my Facebook.
Okay.
And people may want to follow you. And they are black. They are black young men. And one of them is a girl. And the ages are 28. And these all are deceased. 28, 21, and 22. They were killed outside. The neighbors said that they heard, on the street, they heard loud pop. And they said when they ran outside, they saw 4 people laying on the ground. The police said when they made it there, 3 was deceased and 1 was still alive, but that one is in critical condition. So, but they don't know who shot them or why or what. That's just a breaking news story. So I'll move on. I had to throw that one out there. But most of all, look how young they are. Our young people just killing up themselves. 28, 21, and 22. Their lives have been scuffed out. Young folks got to realize they got to stop the violence. Okay, then we have a case in New York City where a 13-year-old boy was at the library, and there was an 8-year-old girl at the library. The 13-year-old boy lured the 8-year-old girl into the bathroom, and he raped the 8-year-old girl. They arrested the young man, but they didn't give out his name or anything. Why would a 13-year-old boy have rape on his mind already? Something is going on. Something is not right. A 13-year-old boy, he lures her to the bathroom.
But you know what?
And
you know what?
This child.
That's
something
so horrible.
Is going on.
You
okay,
know what,
we got another case.
Uh-oh, wait a
come
minute.
Back to all of them. I'm going to just throw them out
Mommy.
Here. And,
Delta, can you hear me, Delta?
Huh?
Delta.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Delta. Yeah, oh, wait, I'm sorry. Mother Hattie,
can
I'm
you
so
hear
sorry.
Me?
I had you. Yes, can you hear me, Delta?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, I want to make a comment about that one just briefly, and I know we're going to come back and speak on your topics. I'm just taking notes. So it was a 13-year-old to rape the 8-year-old, right?
Yes.
Okay.
They said he lured her. They from the video camera. They said the 13-year-old, because they have cameras in the library. He lured her to the bathroom.
And raped. So, you know, sometimes when I'm driving down the street or just wherever, and I see some of the parents picking up the children from school, or they have the children in the car, and the music that the parents listen to, the children are listening to that music. And they're
absolutely
into those
correct.
I guess, thought patterns, all of that, kill them, do this to them, and whatever, all of this, all of, they're receiving all of that information. And so, we wonder, you know, well, why would a 13-year-old, I think some of the music, some of what they're seeing on television, and some of what they're seeing at home.
Yeah,
also
I've just been saying that, true.
And it's unfortunate. Okay, Deb, we're going to come back up and talk about your topic.
Okay. Then we got another one. In Oklahoma, a special needs black girl. It's about 6 kids on a van. They are taking them to a special needs school. And the little girl is 7 years old. She's the only black girl on the bus. And she's the only girl on the bus. They put her way in the back of the bus, just like they're doing Miss Daisy, you know. That's just a joke. And they had a white boy on the bus. And this white boy had a lot of problems. You know how they take them? And when they get in trouble at school, Miss Hattie probably can talk about this. When they get in trouble, they send them to this like school. And this white boy, they sent him there. He was 18 years old. The little black girl was 7 years old. This boy raped this child on the van for a year and a half. A year and a half he raped her.
He raped a special needs girl on the bus?
Yeah, on the minivan bus. But you ain't heard the worst of it. He raped this child for a year and a half. The child got enough nerve that the mother, to tell the mother something was kind of going on. And when once they confronted the young man, the white boy, he admitted that they asked him on the oath in his definition, you know, like taking a statement. He said that he raped the child 15 times. He raped her. He admitted to raping her. But they went before a white judge. The white judge threw out the case, said it wasn't enough evidence. And this man is on tape saying that he raped this child. He said himself that he had sex with 20 different partners by the time he was 14. And he raped this child. He was 18 years old and raped her. She was 7 years old for a year and a half. And he admitted to this. So then they had the white Ku Klux bus driver on TV. He's saying that nothing happened on his bus. He don't believe it. He believed the little girl lying. That's what the man said. He didn't hide it. He didn't hide his redneck color. He said she was lying.
The bus driver said that the girl is lying.
That is correct. And the white boy admitted it, that he raped her about 15 times or more. He said he had sex with the girl for over a year and a half on the bus. Okay, let me go to, let's 18 years old, so let's go to the next topic. We'll come back. Then we have a security guard works for CNN. He has a son. This is a black security guard. He has a son that had issues, and he heard on the radio that his son had a gun. Yeah, his son had a gun, and his son was threatening to kill himself. And his son had another security guard there. But when the father heard it on the radio, the father raced to the scene and talked his son down and talked his son into not harming anybody or anything, you know, doing anything. But when the police pulled up, immediately they said that when the father turned around with his son, the father had retrieved the gun from his son. Immediately when the father turned around, the police opened fire and killed the security guard that worked for CNN. Immediately.
Oh, my goodness. So let's take a quick break, and then let's pick right back up with your hot topics. You're listening to The Lotus Place, and we are in the midst of Delta Cougars' hot topics. Stay tuned for Ask
searching for the best in online black radio, then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Okay, and we are back here at the Lotus Place. If you're listening and you would like to offer a comment, just press star 61. The number to dial in is 641-715-3660, and the participant code is 549032. Okay, Jeff. Come on,
okay.
Jeff. We're listening to your hot topics, and let me see. We left off with the boy in New York, and you were starting on another one.
No, no, darling, not the boy in New York. We down with a man at CNN.
The man at CNN, right.
Yeah, but he was killed by the policeman. He went to get his son because his son was having a mental breakdown. His son had mental issues.
Wait a minute, another mental breakdown.
His son was having issues, and the father went and they said the young man had a gun, threatening to kill himself and harm someone else. The daddy rushed to the scene, which is he is a security guard for CNN, had been for years, and the daddy talked the young man down and got the gun from his son. When the police drove up, they saw a black man with a gun and opened fire and killed the father. So now the boy was already having issues. Now he's showing up going to have issues because they killed his father. Mm-hmm. Okay, then we got two boys, high school boys, they're 16, 17, posted a video on Facebook to make their friends laugh and giggle. They took a girl who was unconscious and videoed it and having sex with her.
Oh,
and they posted it on Facebook. And now they are being charged with rape.
Now they're being charged with rape. Now, didn't they know that you can be charged with
rape? But how stupid can you be? And this is my last one. We already talked about the Chicago incident. This is the last one. We have a 54-year-old black guy who have been going around stealing, breaking into people's houses, stealing. And he had been stealing a lot. So they put out a reward for this gentleman. They put out a reward for him. And the man decided that he wanted to buy his mother a Christmas present. The man who had been breaking in all the houses, who had a reward for him. The man called the police and turned himself in and said that he wanted the reward. To buy his mother a Christmas present. The police said, out of all of his 25 years on the force, he has never seen anything like this before.
Oh, my Lord.
So now they did not give him the reward. Now the man have hired a lawyer to sue them.
Then the lawyer must be stupid.
And those are my hot topics for today. But most
That's
of all,
true.
Most of all, this case in Oklahoma, this is my standout one, where this white boy raped this 7-year-old black special needs child. And if you look at the child, You can tell she's special needs. This white boy raped this child for a year and a half and admitted it. He did a definition video and admitting that he raped this child. Repeatedly, he raped her. And they took him to court. They took him to trial. And the judge let him go.
Said it wasn't enough evidence. And that was in Oklahoma?
Legal Brother Brown. And whoever else would like to speak on it, but since that's Brother Brown's area.
Yeah. Brother Brown, they said.
You know, first of all, that baby should never have been on a bus with 18-year-old boys. That was a setup. And any parent that would allow their 7-year-old to be on a bus with children that age need their heads examined. That's what I think, number one.
They was children of all
Number
ages.
Two, I don't care. I don't care what they were. 7-year-olds don't belong on a bus with 18-year-olds, period.
In
point blank, end of discussion.
Say what, Delta?
The bus
She had no business on the bus with eight. She had no business on the bus. The little boy that's 13 years old, I'm sorry. I'm not blaming the victim. But your 8-year-old girl, daughter has no business, and really your 8-year-old son has no business being in the library unsupervised for anybody to lure them anywhere. My children, I even watch them at church. If they in the bathroom too long, I used to go with them, and they're older now and can talk. I don't let them go in the bathroom at church by themselves.
But you know what, Mother?
You have to monitor.
You have to monitor
children. Let me make this final point. One final point.
Okay.
Sexuality for a 13-year-old boy is pretty normal. They'll put their little penis anywhere in the ground. They're just starting to develop their little sperms is going, and that's normal behavior for them. That's why you always have to watch little boys around anywhere from 10 to 14-year-olds. They don't have any sense yet. They just know this thing is starting to do something, and they're trying to figure out what it is. Mm. I think that's pretty normal behavior that boys would, and not that, I think it's pretty normal.
I was just going to mention about the library, and I totally agree with you, Mother Hattie. You should watch your children wherever they are going to these restrooms. But in Memphis, that library was used as an aftercare center. It used to be a time where you could go in the library and you could actually sit there in quietness. But now it's an after school program for those parents that cannot afford after school care. They don't want the children at home or whatever, because it was ridiculous, because at the end of the night, like at 9 o'clock, it got to a point where, like 30 minutes before the library would close. In Memphis, the library was closed at 9 o'clock. Here in Texas, they close about 5. Imagine that. But anyway, so the parents, librarians would have to go on the intercom and say, if you need a ride, now you need to come to the desk and call your parents. Do not wait until 9 o'clock. The library is closed. So apparently the librarian's been having to stay there late and wait with these children for their parents to come and pick them up, because either they're at work or whatever the case, whatever they're doing. And so it's sad, but she probably didn't even have her parents there. But then you should, like you said, you shouldn't have your children going into the bathroom by themselves. You just shouldn't. I could.
I agree with you, Mother Hattie. You have to watch them.
You gotta watch them.
You gotta watch them 24/7, because people are always looming around. Not only a 13-year-old would do it, an adult would do that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Don't take
Brother
but a split second.
That's right,
Brother
Brown.
Yeah. First of all, the library, there was a situation like that happened in Arizona at a casino where this man had his daughter with him, and little girl was running to the bathroom and the casino was sued. And I'm not saying that was the protocol in this library, but parents need to understand, as the mother had said, you cannot leave unsupervised children at a certain age when you have predators out there. And we know that there are predators. Some of these people look at weird shit on, excuse my language, on these computers in the library. And, you know, you don't know what they're doing in the library. And these kids are very smart when they look at stuff like that. They know how to tap into websites that show these things. And it's easy for them to tap into that. But you have to monitor your own children. Mm-hmm. I keep saying this repeatedly. Parents are responsible for their own children. You do not leave children under the ages of 10 and 11 unsupervised. Don't do it. Now, she has a terrible lawsuit against the library because, you know, the library, even though they weren't responsible for their children, the act occurred on their premises. But that young man who raped that young lady on that bus for a year and a half, he needs to be dealt with by the community.
Hello.
Yeah. See, one of my problems, and I was reading the book, I was reading some things about Marcus Garvey. One of the elements when Marcus Garvey started back, the Black Star Corps and the Black Nurses, he was organizing us into a faction of taking care of ourselves. You know, the criminal element, when they saw Marcus Garvey soldiers patrolling the neighborhood, did not occur. You know, it was up to our modern times, it was more familiar with the original Black Panther Party, not these fools they got out of here today. But we should not be still dependent upon white people. Okay. Taking care of our children and doing these things that we feel is necessary. You know, and then once these happen, then we're trying to look to them for some help. It's just like looking to the slave master for the overseer who raped our women on the plantation. We have the same mentality. We're looking at these white police officers and these white judges, whether they Ku Klux Klan or whatever, they're white. And we must understand, white folks are not going to save our black asses. They never have saved us. They never will save us. And I think it's time for us to stop doing this. You know, we have not gotten rid of the slave mentality that we've been suffering from for over 2,000 years.
Yeah.
And until we get rid of that mentality and stop depending and relying on white people to save us, and realize that we have to take some things into our own hands.
Mm-hmm. Right about that.
And you know, we should stop believing that we're going to have some type of peace in America. There are no peace march. We've been marching forever, and we still have gotten no peace. We're not going to get peace marching. It's never going to happen. That is a dream. Oh. All these people marching up and down the streets in Chicago, another kid got shot by the car.
And the
beat goes on.
You're right. And the beat goes on. So all the marching they did in Baltimore, all the marching, they continue to have murders. They have murders in Baltimore every day. Every day, Baltimore is the number one murder capital in this United States, Baltimore, Maryland.
Murder rate has gone up since the death of Freddie Gray.
It was up before Freddie Gray. The murder rate
went up more.
Well, I don't know what you call more, but that's just the statistic they're giving us. But I'm here to tell you because I'm in and out of Baltimore every month. And they have on the app that one weekend, I think it's been a while back, one weekend they had eleven shootings in 2 days. Eleven shootings in 2 days, and seven of them were murder. But they you know, and they don't broadcast this on national news. This is Baltimore news. But I'm just saying, you know, we have to understand that we can't keep begging white folks to take our problem and sending that case to that judge. He reluctantly said that this was not enough evidence. See, where's the black man's honor? Mm-hmm. When will we stop marching up and down the street and formulate an armed force within this country? If white people can form their own militia, then why can't we form our own army? These white people, I was looking at a thing on one of these news stations the other day, and they took this little white boy, 13 years old. They took him all around. They filmed it in Norfolk, Virginia. They took him to different places, you know, like by lottery tickets, trying to buy a cigarette. And he was turned down. They took him to a gun show and gave him $200. He walked up and he looked at a rifle. And he asked the man what the price of the rifle was. The man told him $200. The man didn't check his ID. He's at a legal gun show. And he was able to purchase that weapon for $200 and walk out the door at 13 years of age.
What?
That's right. They filmed it. And this was not a hope. Because
what age are you supposed to be to get purchasing a weapon in that city?
And no, in the state of Virginia, you have to be 18 years old.
18, okay.
You have to be 18 years old. This kid was 13 years old. But at the gun show, they don't check ID. They don't do none of that unless you're black. And this kid, white kid, purchased a gun. And he couldn't buy a lottery ticket. He couldn't buy a cigarette. And they filmed all of it. But he could go and purchase a weapon at a gun show.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to understand the nature of this beast. We have to understand that these people have no more use for us. They're out to kill us. We have not formulated an army. We are still dealing with the slave mentality that we're going to have some kind of peace. And until we change the attitude to understand the only spiritual power that we have is our ancestors and understand where we come from, it's very essential to us as African people to understand that we are not American. And until we understand that we're not American, we're the most mistreated people on this planet, yet we're still trying to assimilate with white folks. We can't do that. We should understand at this point that we are in a war. We've been inviting people over there in Afghanistan. We just don't have no damn guns. And we can shout
you right about that?
We're getting shot. We're getting not just shot at. We're getting shot down. We're being boycotted economically. We don't have no job. Economically, we don't have the proper housing for our people. I mean, we're in a war. But we're not looking at it like that. We're looking at it like, you know, we're going to keep on pushing these people and we'll get what we deserve. They're giving you what they think you deserve. They're giving you nothing. And until we wake up and come out of this comatose state that we're in, whether it be religion, whatever it is, we need to wake up out of these comas that we're in and realize that we're African people and we have to band ourselves together based on African values, not somebody else's values, not European or Asian values, our own values. Go back and read about who we are as a people. Learn who we are. utilize these things and practice them.
Hey, Brother Brown, would you say that you see more younger people waking up today, especially after like a series of these major events like Gina Six and Trayvon Martin, what's the little boy name in Florida, the other little boy, that white man went to jail. What's his name?
Jordan Davis.
Jordan Davis. And then we have Tia Board and Ariana Jones. I mean, the list goes on and on, but like a series of these like major blatant like deaths that like hit social media and the news and the world and all that. Mm-hmm. Eric Gardner. Mm-hmm. Do you think that more people have started to wake up and kind of sort of become a little more socially aware?
Well, I mean they might be socially aware, but there's one thing that I feel that's gonna hurt us, and that is a lot of these young people are still trying to allow the assimilation of other nationalities to come in with us. And mm-hmm. I don't buy that. I do not buy that. Their mindset is today. Now, you have a few of them that are African conscious because I have met some of them and I have helped mm-hmm. some of them. But the majority of them that's out there in these streets, they have bought into these LGBT elements. They have bought into this assimilation element. And that's mm-hmm. not going to work. It's a trick. And what's mm-hmm. going to happen is that these elements that they're buying into, after these things blow down, these white folks going to leave their asses right where they found them at. And that's the sad part about it, because you have a whole lot of young blacks that have bought into this assimilationist mindset.
Yeah, I agree with you. But I think that we've always had some like that, but now you see so many of the young people, like you said, Brother Brown, it's more of a I'm joining because of this or that, mm-hmm. and now you have a lot of paid activists and things like that. Hey, I want to go ahead on and make sure we get Delta's letter in so that we can get her letter in, and then we can continue to speak on some of the hot topics and hear some more critical analysis. Delta?
Yeah, can I come in on something Mr. Brown said right quick, please?
Of course, sure.
Okay, I was listening at what Mr. Brown said about, like, in the community, we need to wake up and started taking actions for our own people, because you know what? If that had been a little white girl and she was raped by a black boy, she don't even really have to be raped. He can allege that he looked at her the wrong way.
Like what happened with that little boy being suspended for looking at the white girl?
That is correct. They would have mm-hmm. came. And if they, well, I put it like this, if they said that he had a touched her, not raped her, the white girl would say the black boy touched her. Don't you know his daddy would have came with a bunch of more whites and pulled that boy
she
out of the
have.
House and killed him. And then here it is, this white boy admitted it, that he raped this child by 15 times, and he'd been raping her for a year and a half. And he's saying that he had sex with this child on that school bus, on that van, for a year and a half. And you know, my husband always said that if somebody did something to his daughter, he would take the law into his own hand too. He would not wait for no policeman or judge or somebody to give him justice. He would handle it himself. Now, where's this child's father? Because they didn't show the cops, they just kept showing the mother. So yes, there come a time we have to take a stand for what we believe in.
Where are her brothers? Where are the other people in the community? The other men? The other
yes,
women?
Yes, the community.
Where's, Yeah, where are all those people? I'm sure she attends church. What were her church members? Mm-hmm. Were her sorority sisters?
Her friends.
Her other sisters. Whoever it is. Where are they? Where are your people? But then, too, I have to go back to, like, what Sister Empress always says. Then when you do reach out and try to ask people for help, remember now, what have you deposited into the community? You have a lot of these people, they never come to a city meeting, a school board meeting, never involved in any community meetings, not doing anything. Then when their child gets hurt or shot or killed or whatever, then they want everybody to come out. But you've never put anything into the community, too. So we got to always remember, support people, but don't just wait until it comes to your door.
Bye.
Be involved. So I don't know. Maybe nobody wants to support her. Maybe they, I don't know.
So, you know, I feel
it,
like...
It would be nice to know what's the background. Why isn't anybody helping this woman fight this case?
I feel like this. As I said earlier, those of us who are still in a comatose state, we're going to get a wake-up call one day. And when we get that wake-up call, then what we have to do is understand that tragedies may happen to wake us up. See, sometimes people have never anticipated in some of the things that I said, and then all of a sudden I might get a call and say, Mr. Brown, I need your help.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, if somebody called me, even though they have never supported me, it is not duty as an elder in the Black African community to still go to their aid. See, I can't hold that against them because they've been in a comatose state. Because at one period of time, all of us was in a comatose state.
Mm-hmm. Hear, hear.
We all had to wake up.
I agree with you on that, Brother
Brown.
Sure did. 100%.
Sure did.
But you can't, but once the knowledge, this is how our ancestors are beginning to deal with us. Once the knowledge is imparted to you, you can't keep going back to the ways of your oppressor.
True that.
If the
we got to take a quick break.
Okay, yeah,
let's take a quick break and we'll come right back.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But you're on point, Brother Brown.
Thank you.
And always.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
All right, and we are back here at the Lotus Place, and it is time for Ask Delta. Delta, Delta, Delta. Your letter has created so much controversy, the response to your letter. So, I mean, not controversy, a lot of talk. So I'm just loving your letters, Delta, and this is a good one. And this one, we have our first letter from a guy. Our very first letter from, a male listener. So I'm so glad that he wrote this letter in, Delta. And it's a very good letter. Let me just try to sum it up, pulling out the pieces for you. So this one is called Popular Girl, Shy Guy. So this is a shy guy. Mm-hmm. Popular Girl, Shy Guy. Okay. So he says, Delta. He's a college student, and there's this girl that he likes. He takes a class with her. And the only thing about it is she seems to be a very popular girl and well-liked and well-known, and he's pretty shy. He would like to ask her to go out, but he doesn't know how to approach girls, females. So he would like to know from you, Delta, this question is, how should he approach this girl? And if she says no, then what should he do? So he needs some help trying to talk to this young lady that he's attracted to.
Well, the first thing he can do is, if he feel like he really, really want to get her attention, the first thing is focus on himself. And when he focus on himself, he need to look within himself and find out, first thing, how can he approach her and how can he bring, get himself out of his shyness? Well, number one thing is he got to stand, you stand in the mirror and say, this is who I am, and I am very confident in myself. I believe that I can have anything that I set my mind to. And first of all, I'm saying this to say this, is he have to build up his confidence. And most of all, you got to tell yourself. You got to feel good about yourself and bring yourself out of that shyness. Then you kind of go over and ask her out. And if she says no, you don't give up right then. You continue to go back and be persistent. Don't be so persistent that it come to harassment. But be persistent, and you can give her a card. You can give her flowers. You can tell her, I really, really like for us to go out. I really like for us to go out and have, you know, have a meal, have a dinner, have lunch, you know, whatever you want to do. This is what I will do. So most of all, get up your courage, look within yourself and tell yourself that you are handsome, you are good looking, you are worthy, and then you go and approach her. And then if she says no, remember the key is, just because she said no, you continue to go back, go back, go back, go back. That's my philosophy. Do you have something, Brother Brown, as a man you would like to add?
Yeah, first of all,
I like that, Delta.
When young men have this problem of being shy and not it's a necessity that older men pull them under their wing and teach them. See? And that's what we're not doing. We're not teaching the younger generation of men how to respectfully deal with black young babies. And that comes from a grooming aspect, because, you know, a lot of times these young men, in my opinion, they got these little natty hair dudes they wear, which I'm not in favor of. They don't comb their hair, they think that's cool. Then they got these young men put this red streak of blonde hair in their head. Let's look like this. Let's look like something that a woman would like.
Brother Brown, wait a minute. Wait.
That's a turn off to me, Brother Brown. I'm with you. I don't like all that.
It's a turn off to me, too. But is it a style for these young people now, like maybe afros or windblown were for women? Now, Delta Cougar and Mother Hattie, I know you ladies probably wore one of those windblown or a jerry curl or something back in the day. So is that like a style for them, Brother Brown?
But I'm just generating conversation. Some things you don't pick up on your head looking like a rooster. But let's stay mostly on our letter right now so we can give this guy a look.
That's right, Delta. We're not trying to dress nobody.
So that's what I'm saying. I'm trying, young girls, they look at some of these guys' appearance. And if your appearance is tacky, that might not be attractive to the woman. Now, I'm asking all of you women, If a man came up to you at my age with his pants hanging off and he had on a football
suit. No, before you finish, no.
No, right. That's not.
You
not
got a point.
Either,
so
brother,
I hope that he has
like
his
that
pants
either
pulled up.
Right. That's
some women like bad boys.
You can be a bad boy
they
and
sure
ain't got
do
a like that.
Some women like bad boys.
Yeah, but that don't
no, that's
I might
nasty
want a bad
dresser
boy.
That ain't bad boy. That's nasty.
I was a bad boy. I ain't know what dress.
You're still a bad boy.
I still am, and I don't.
Well, you know, that's exactly my point I'm getting ready to make. The way you dress don't mean nothing because you could be dressed up. Clean cut.
What I'm saying, young men need to be groomed into how to deal with women. When I was coming up,
if a man approached me with his pants hanging down, he would not get a second look. And it's not because of my age. If I was younger,
he would not even get a first look.
I know that's right.
And then you have to teach young men how to verbally approach women. I was with an old fool one time who was a friend of mine, and I forgot where we were. We was in Walmart, and he walked up to this woman, and he rolled around in one of them roller carts in Walmart.
Then he rolled up on that Walmart. Okay.
Oh, he rolled up on them, and hey, girl, this woman about 45, 46 years old, and she just looked at him like he was a fool.
You know, what did he
got
say
to the car, man? Hey, baby girl. And I said, what is
you want to ride in my car? You're like, hey, baby girl, you want to ride in my car around Walmart?
He's riding around on a handicap, rolling up on this nice little thing. Then the lady told me, said, that's my wife. That's my girl. And the lady looked at him and said, excuse me, Mr. Sly, I don't even know you. See, that was inappropriate. That was very inappropriate.
Well,
and it was childish for somebody 50-some years old to approach a woman like that.
Well, he clearly has some mental health issues.
I've been his friend because he was, you know, but I'm just saying, the way I deal with younger men when they come to me with, and I had a couple of them when I was going to college, and they come to me with stuff like this, and what do I do, and how do I approach? I said, first of all, you be courteous to the woman.
Uh-huh.
You be very courteous if you see.
And that goes a long ways, Brother Brown.
Yeah, you know, you be very courteous.
It sure does.
Yeah. How you doing?
So courteous how? Okay.
Just like if you see something, suppose you got on some tight jeans, and you might walk up to us and say, what type of jeans? I like the style of those jeans. Don't tell them you like them because they're tight. Just say, I like the style of those jeans. Certain things you say to a woman, you know, let her know that she makes her feel good about herself. Once you make a woman feel good about herself, then you don't have no problem going to the movie to buy her a sandwich. So if you come over there with ignorant stuff, and she, I don't want to be dealing with that fool. And that goes for young old women. You have to know how to approach women. And that's one of the things that some of these young men don't have.
Because
they think that they gangsters and they thugs and they somebody told them all this foolishness. And, you know, it don't go a long way with young girls. And I guess that's why some of our young are going out with each other because the young men don't even know how to deal with them. You know,
okay, I have a comment about the question, please.
Come on.
Okay. Speaking from a female's point of view, since they are in college and they do have a class together, a good way, an alternative way of approaching her would be to approach her in the fact that they have something in common. They take a class together. Start
right.
It as a conversation. Right. Casually, respectfully, courteously. Like Brother Brown said, always be courteous. Excuse me, hi. We take the so-and-so class together. And she's probably seeing you. Yeah, yeah. What do you think about you know, the so-and-so. What do you think about Professor so-and-so? I really like that class. And some kind of casual intro like that, just based on the fact that they have something in common, and that way she can get, you know, feedback, you know, give them feedback. They can talk, exchange words. And then, you know, I was wondering if you'd like to have coffee with me sometime. You know, start light. Don't do the dinner thing for me.
Maybe go study.
I'm
gonna tell you another thing that'll work. If you see her in the line going to buy a soda, then you get in behind her, and when they get to the checkout element, tell her, "Listen, excuse me, say, I got this." And she gonna come.
Oh yeah, that'd be
nice. Yeah, mm-hmm. I got this. I said, because you know what, I'm having a problem with my study, and we're in the same class, and I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions, cause something on the syllabus that I don't understand.
All right, bro. Yeah. Well, he's,
all right now.
Okay. I love
there you
it.
Go.
Yeah, that's a
there
good
you go.
One right there.
That's
she
a
didn't
good
even
one.
See that one coming. Mm.
And she gonna be overwhelmed. She gonna say, "Well, I don't say mm-hmm. okay." Yeah, because
she'll appreciate the sincerity.
Right.
And he does need to have a couple of questions ready.
Yeah. And then when you get an answer, well, look. Is anybody sitting with you? And because after we, you know, drink these sodas and eat our sandwich and say, I would just like to show you a couple of things that I need help with. You might not need help with them, but she don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
She can go in and say, well, you know, I understand. But so, well, look, so what period do you, what rate do you have between classes so we can meet up in the library? And so then we can sit down and then you can show me something. And that's where you get to know, and then you're going from there.
I like that.
Very good.
Like that.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So those are some great approaches, great tips to approach her, I would say. So popular girl, shy guy. There you go. You have it. Delta, any closing comments on... some tips for Shy Guy?
And Shy Guy just need to have some money. And I see it like this. And he have some money. And when he has some money, he can get him to do anything he wants.
Coming at him with some gold digging, man.
Oh, Lord. He's trying to
get in the man's pocket so his girl can sit out. He already... That's what kind of game you playing. I already picked your whole car.
Shy Guy said, I mean, Delta told him, Shy Guy, you better have some money. He's a college student. So maybe once he graduates, he can date this young lady for 4 years, and that'll be his wife, and he can propose to her. If all works out, then that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
That would be great. All right.
If they fall magically in love,
and dance mm-hmm. like a dervish.
Mm-hmm. Dance like a dervish.
Okay. Well, all right, then. That was a good one. Let me see. Aja, Mother Zola, you had another melanin piece you want to share? With us?
Oh, yes, I do. All right, now, there's a quote that says, the universe is shaking you to awaken you, which is what we're just talking about. It's a lot of stuff going on right now. So the shift is here and things are changing. It's changing right now. It's not coming. It's changing. It's really here. It's a different season of the universe. And like what Brother Brown said, there's a war going on, and it's not your mundane, run-of-the-mill, I want your riches kind of war. This is going to take spiritual warfare tools using the mind, the body, and the spirit, which on this show, The Lotus Place, we will discuss some of these tools in our mind and body and soul segment, along with readings from our listening audiences. Please submit what you want to read about. We must get our bodies in shape too, people, our physical bodies. And that's the root chakra. That's the first one. And it's not for size or, you know, I want to do an 8 or whatever, attractive physique for a man. But it's to withstand the challenges of this new age, this shift that we're getting ready to, that we're into, that we're moving into. And nutrition for our body. Our bodies, like Brother Brown was saying, for ourselves, not for someone else's. Hey, the Asians do it. The Indian culture does it. They do things according to their culture. They don't copy and imitate another group of people. We're imitating a group of people that captured many, many of our ancestors, changed their diet completely, deleted and banned their language, destroyed and replaced their worship and spiritual practices with their choosing, separated families, took their family namesake, replaced them with their own multiple times, and to this day and time prefer our organs and skin, our organs to theirs, and is constantly experimenting on these organs because of the melanin, the precious melanin, to determine the source of melanin strength and weaknesses, if it has any. They want to know, what is it about this magnificent melanin? So essentially, after knowing all this, we currently base our health and nutrition based on the standards and recommendations of this group of people that I just mentioned, who set these standards based on their anatomy, their growth rate, their neurologic development, and normal blood count, T cells, and everything. Whereas melanin-dominant individuals have a definite need for certain amino acids based on the amount of melanin that we have in our bodies. Our blood count and our T cells are totally different from theirs. And this is well known. This has been published in the Journal of Clinical Nutrition way back in 1975. Different groups of people based on their region, DNA, et cetera, have their own growth rate variations, blood values, bone and neurologic development curves, which confirms the uniqueness of that race. And we, as descendants of the motherland, we have our own uniqueness. Why else would we consistently be experimented on to this day? The black woman's placenta is cherished. Our organs are taken when it's a homicide by law. Our organs are special. But what we are doing to these organs is incorrect, based on incorrect information. Melanin is considered the fountain of youth. And we, as the most melanin-dominated people in the whole world, have got, it's so necessary for us to realize that we need to change the way we think, the way we do things, the things that we're putting in our body, based on who we are, who we really, really are. What do you have to say about that, Black Rose? The fact that we're using nutrition values and we're treating diseases based on the Caucasian's anatomy or their philosophy or their standards. And we're being treated based on those things, and it's been proven that it's a difference.
Our physiology is not the same as theirs. That's number one.
Right.
You know,
right.
They can look at us being 10 pounds overweight according to their standards, mm-hmm. and say that we're overweight.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to understand, you know, and being that this is their truly chakra self-determination, we need to understand that we can no longer let them define who we are.
Yeah.
We have to redefine ourselves based on our own African values and the values of our ancestors, which is our
power. Exactly.
And they don't believe in ancestral power. That belongs to us. Can't take it away from us. And they can't use it. they can't use it. But when it comes to the health element, we should nurture our bodies with more fruits and vegetables, cleanse our bodies with stuff like that.
On a regular basis.
Right. Stay away in that air told that broccoli is good for us. Broccoli is good for them. Broccoli is not good for African people because our digestive tract is not like theirs.
Our digestive tract is totally different.
They come from a whole element. They come from a whole different element of diet. They live in colder climates where they had to eat certain foods. They didn't know who they were. And, you know, once they enslaved us, they tried to incorporate and shape their environment, shape our environment around and need around what they felt was necessary for us. And they have been doing that forever. And then it's time for us to our own environment. What's good for
us? In the Caucasian blood, they have more ammonia and sulfur in their bodies than we do. And that is why you see them walking around with shorts on in the cold winter. Because ammonia reacts different from any other chemical. When you place ammonia in freezing temperatures, it boils. And it does the exact opposite. When you place it in boiling temperature, it freezes. So they get very, very warm. They get very warm because of all that ammonia and sulfur, and that's that smell that you smell sometimes when it gets wet. That ammonia and sulfur coming out of their bodies. We don't have the same thing. Black infants are smaller in weight and length at birth than Caucasian infants. At the same time, developmentally advanced when the infants are born full term and mothers have received prenatal care. So during the childhood years and adolescent years, the melanin dominant child stands taller than the Caucasian child in the same age group. And so nutritional requirements must be balanced during these years for the melanin dominant child to provide for the accelerated growth spurt, you know, during this phase. So they're basing their nutrition on how their bodies is in the same way with our like you said, our skeletal and our bone mass is different. We have more mineral in our body, and so since our bone mass is so much thicker than theirs, when we go for that little health exam or whatever, osteoporosis doesn't show up as quickly in us for them to treat it because of our bone and muscle mass. They're using their tools and their standards to measure us when it's totally different.
The majority of us some of us who have osteoporosis problems, especially in black male, African male, come from years and years of hard work at an early age. And you break your body down because you're eating food that you have been taught and trained to believe that would give you a certain amount of energy and power in doing this work. Whereas, and this is something else I looked at, the average white male begins working when he's 25 or 26 years old. The average black male begins working when he's 14 or 15 years old. So by the time we're 24, we've been working 10 years prior to them sitting down trying to learn how to run business.
We are naturally stronger, built better, and we can actually handle more if we have the right nutrition. We're not feeding our bodies properly to handle because we are stronger. We can withstand. When they brought those enslaved, when they captured those Africans and brought them over to this land, they were able to work day and night. And still, they would have lasted longer had they been fed the proper nutrition. They can't handle it, no matter what they eat.
Right. But
no matter what they do.
But the other point I wanted to make, like I worked as a longshoreman for 21 years. And in the course of that employment, I was injured on the job 4 times. Now, I was struck with, one time a guy ran into me with a forklift. The rear end of the with the counterweight, which weighed about 2,000 pounds, and busted my whole shoulder up. But never broke a bone. I was hit in the head with a train, drove down to the top of some freight, never broke a bone.
Right.
The way my ligaments and stuff were torn, and because of the impact of these accidents, my ligaments and stuff was torn. Well, I had to have these operations. And as a result of these operations, in order for me to recover, they had one operation, they had to cut part of my clavicle off, and they had to put pins in it, to put my arm down on the inside so that I could be able to use it. And then I suffered the same element on my left shoulder, which they had to go.
Well, let me tell you what happened to me, Brother Brown. I was 6 years old, and I was hit by a car, and I came home the same day. The same day, no broken bones or nothing. My brother said I went off the ground and hit the ground. Of course, I don't remember all of that, but that's miraculous. You know, we're built so strong. We really are. We can withstand so much.
They couldn't figure out after this guy ran into me with a forklift why he didn't break my arm. And I mean, he hit me hard. But I had torn ligaments on the inside, and they tried to treat me that they had a bruise. But I didn't accept that. I went and had to get an MRI on my shoulder and found out that I did have a torn little bit of cuff. And I had nerve damage, And, I went out on workers' comp. But I'm just saying, the way he hit me, it should have broken my shoulder and my arm.
But it didn't.
It didn't break. Only had one broken bone in my body. And that was in 1970s.
Hey, yeah. Brother Brown, we have just a few more seconds. Close us out with some some kind of gratitude to the ancestors or something. Give us a good closing, will you?
Oh, yeah, no problem. I just would like to thank the ancestors for the second day of Kwanzaa, in which we acknowledge Kuja Chakavia, which is the day of self-determination, Ashe. I would like to thank the ancestors for giving us wisdom, knowledge, and understanding through the last year of being able to dialogue with each other in peace and harmony, and being able to communicate with each other. But of all things, being able to understand the pouring out of the spirits of my ancestors and allowing us to come closer to our African roots and understanding who we are, defining ourselves, understanding ourselves, and bringing myself into an awareness of making libation daily for the spiritual power that we need to overcome the obstacles of oppression we have endured for over 2,000 years. Ashe?
Ashe.
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 Ashe. Thank you, Mother Brown.
Ashe.
Mother Zola, Icy Hot, and Delta Kuga. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Scotty, so very much. Peace and good night. Namaste. We'll be back.
Namaste.
On Wednesday.